Our podcast will begin in just a moment. InvestTalk distribution is made possible by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. Of course, every investor's goal is profits, leveraging your invested dollars to grow your retirement portfolio. But during volatile times, achieving this goal takes a well-reasoned strategy to turn sudden market moves into profits. Profits and protection, taking advantage of volatile times, is our latest addition to the webinar library open to InvestTalk insiders. Join up for free. Just go to investtalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab. Now, today's InvestTalk. You're listening to an encore presentation of InvestTalk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next InvestTalk.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to InvestTalk. It is Monday, and I appreciate you being with me. We're here to start a fresh new week. InvestTalk is all about enabling the average investor to realize better than average results. That's our goal. And this goes whether you're managing your own money or you work with a professional, I don't care. We work to turn the possibility of growing your money into a probability. Possibility into a probability. Even in a falling market, better than average means not falling with the market, not falling as much. Maybe you'll go down, but you won't go down as much. It's key. It's extremely important to try to hold on to gains. And you're not always successful, and you're not trying to time the market. That's not really what it's about. It's just trying to take advantage of situations in the marketplace. And you know, there's things you can do to protect yourself. Now, in a rising market, of course, better than average means you want to do better than average. But that's also difficult. Don't think it's simple. These are not, you know, it sounds simple, but it's not. It takes a lot of work. Now, whether you invest directly or individual stocks or through employer plan or some other program, it doesn't matter, IRAs, Roth IRAs, the effort is to try that we make here is to try to deepen your understanding of how the money marketplace works. It's trying a straightforward discussion about how and why things go up and down. I mean, long term, it's really, really, really simple. Stocks go up in price if they make more and more and more money. It will eventually go up in price. Doesn't go up perfectly, though. Just because it makes money and money this year doesn't mean the stock price will go up this year. But if it makes money, more money this year, and then more money next year, and then more money the next year after that, eventually that stock price, investors are going to recognize that consistency and go up. It's one of the most reliable things that you as an individual can rely on. Now, let me plug my book a little bit because I really think it can help you. I really think my book can help you. It's called Better Than Average Investing for the Average Investor. And it walks through basic concepts, terms, basic fundamentals, and basic charting patterns. It's not advanced. It's beginner. But it will help you get a good foundation. I sincerely believe that every investor should expect better than average results. What you need is accurate information and a balanced perspective. And it's key to making better decisions, those things. Information and perspective. You know, try to step back from the craziness of bubbles and crowds and what's going on, you know, that this is doesn't things can't be sustainable. Don't get hyped up about everybody else talking about a certain investment and everybody's so excited about it and you jump in with them. That's not how you're going to be better than average. Okay, you can see more about my book and go to investtalk.com. You can order it on investtalk.com. Just click on the investment tab. InvestTalk tab, I should say. There are many other books listed there as well that are really good. Today, we've got 5 tips for getting started with ETFs, exchange-traded funds. You heard of me talking about them in the past few weeks. I'm talking about for a while now. Maybe you're not clear on how they work or how they compare with mutual funds. Which ones to choose, how to buy and sell them. And that's going to be one of our talking points today, by the way. But as always, I'm counting on you to set the agenda for the program, not me. We want to answer your questions, not things I think you should be listening to, even though I will bring them up. I will talk about them. But you are the one that drives a program. So give me a call, Maybe you want to talk about analytical tools that are available to you to analyze things. You have questions maybe about reverse mortgages. How much money do you need to begin investing in individual stocks? Because there is a certain amount. So I want to hear your questions. Let's check in now with our 24-hour listen line, 888-99-CHARGE, our anytime number.
Hi, this is John from Walnut Creek. I have a question. When selecting a financial advisor, how important is it that they have audited track records? And who is the auditor that performs these audits? And how often do they occur or should they occur? Thank you very much. I enjoy your show.
Almost all financial advisors, registered investment advisors, will not have financial audited financials. Those are the terms used by mutual funds, and they, of course, will want you to have audited financials because they're required to have audited financials. And the reason being is a mutual fund is just one fund. Each of their fund, you know, whatever it is just one. They can have hundreds or thousands of investors in that one fund. And now all they had to do is audit the financials of the fund. As a registered investment advisor, which I am one, or other types of investment advisors, they have to, if they're going to have audited financials, each individual account that they have, each person they have under management has to be audited individually. I have 200, 300 clients. Do you know how much that would cost to have every client's account audited? So it's not critical. You're not going to get it from people like me, and that's one of the reasons why I tell people I buy the exact same things for myself as I do for my clients at the exact same price, exact same time, exact same percentages, because then they know that I'm doing the same thing, and I prove it when I meet with people. I'll show them that that's what I'm doing. So I prove it. And at least you know that I'm doing the same thing as everybody else. And, of course, do I want to make money with my money? And not just with a little bit of my money, all my money. Not with a little bit. You know, anybody can do a little bit with all of my money and all of my various programs. So it's not that critical. But you do want to know, you know, what is the person's goal? What kind of investor is he? How much risk does he take, he or she? How they get paid? That's very important, how someone gets paid. Do they sell you loaded funds? Are they buying only mutual funds? Is that the only program they have? Because those are expensive. I mean, no matter what anybody says, they're expensive, especially if they're loaded. They're very expensive. Loaded meaning paying commissions to the person selling them. So, yeah, there's certain things you want to know. Having audited financials, it's nice, but you're not going to get that from an investment advisor. You're just not. You can get it from mutual funds, and that's about it. Five tips for getting started with ETFs. Five tips for getting started with ETFs. That's our main talking point today. Also, I want to talk about a very interesting sell signal. How strong it is, well, I'm going to let you decide. It's only happened two times in 20 years. So I'll let you decide that. Does the stock market guide the Federal Reserve policy? Does the stock market guide their policy? We'll have a nice discussion about that. Income investments other than dividend stocks. I'm going to list a number of them, most of them really. Income investments other than dividend stocks. And briefly talk about the, I have nine of them, and briefly talk about the pros and cons about them. Okay, that's what we're going to discuss today, unless you want to talk about something else. So you're listening to Invest Talk. I invite you to join in on Invest Talk Insiders. You're sign up for free on investtalk.com. Click on the Invest Talk tab. If you have a question or want to share your investing experiences, why not do it now? I welcome your call, 888-99-CHART.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
How about Leon in San Mateo? Hi, Leon. How you doing?
I've been listening to you guys' show for maybe about a week now.
Okay.
And I'm not an investor at all.
Okay.
But I've always wanted to get in. I have no clue at all on what process it takes to get into doing something like this. I don't have a whole lot of money, but still,
okay.
I would really like to get into the market and keep learning more from your program as well as other things I see on the internet.
Okay, Leon, you know, it's a great question. And just by the fact that you're listening and have the interest, you will be able to do this. It's not rocket science. I keep telling people, you don't have to be a genius. You just have to have the interest.
Yeah.
And yes, everybody started from somewhere. You just don't wake up in the morning, therefore, you know everything. No one. Leon, I learn stuff all the time, and I've been doing this for years. Now, if I can, let me give you a couple of suggestions, you know, if you're just starting out. First of all, don't buy just one stock. That's
okay.
Not a good way to start. I would suggest if you are going to start buying stuff, you either buy mutual funds or what's called exchange-traded funds, ETFs.
Okay.
Which are like mutual funds, but they buy and sell like stocks. And they're baskets of stocks, ETFs. Go to E-Trade, the ETF center on eTrade.com, and they'll tell you and describe the ETFs. And, you know, you can have an ETF of like an oil sector. You can have ETF in a country, you know, like China. You can have an ETF in biotech. So it gives you some more diversification, but you don't have a lot of money. You can buy just a few shares if you want.
Oh, okay.
Now, that will get you into the game a little bit, to play a little bit, but I would suggest that you read first and read some of the basic books. Peter Lynch is a very easy book. Peter Lynch, Beating the Street. I would strongly suggest that book. That book is 200 pages, okay? Very easy to read.
Oh, okay.
Beating the Street is an older book, but it's still in print. Or One Up on Wall Street by Peter Lynch. Also, I would suggest that you come to our conference. And we are all about teaching. These are teaching conferences. That's all they're all about. And if you have an interest and you want to get into a newsletter, we put out a newsletter. And the second section, we have four sections. It comes out every week. The second section is how to manage a portfolio of stocks, how to do it.
Okay.
Might be something you're interested in. Go to investtalk.com. You can sign up for there. Comes out every Friday.
Oh, okay.
You know, just by the fact that you are interested, you will learn how to do this.
Okay.
Leon, appreciate the call.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling. Jamie, San Diego, how you doing?
Hi, Steve. Thanks for taking the call.
Thanks for calling.
Steve, you oftentimes talk about a chart that is a triple top, double top, and
yes,
so
ma'am.
On and so forth.
Yeah.
What period of time you go look at it? 3 years, nine months?
Very good question, Jamie. Very good. And these are kind of questions where I can go in more detail and show you in our conferences that we have, because it's a very good question. You first start with, Jamie, a one-year daily chart. In other words, it's a daily chart of the stock price over 1 year period.
Okay.
That's where you look for double and triple tops in the last 12 months. If the stock chart's not really telling you much, you can go back now to 3 years.
Okay.
But usually in that one-year period, it tells you a story.
All right.
Okay, but we generally look at a daily charts. I usually go to what's called a weekly chart, and that goes back about 4 years.
Okay.
So I do that just to get a feel for what's really happening. Is this stock continuing to move up? Has it been here 2 years ago at this price and just can't seem to move from it? That kind of thing is what you're looking at.
All right.
Okay, Jamie?
Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks for the call. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Well, we're going to talk about the difference between ETFs and mutual funds and try to get you to understand the pros and cons of them. Because everybody's moving to ETFs thinking that's the way to go and not mutual funds. And to be perfectly honest, that's not necessarily correct thinking. And I want to go over some of the reasons why. It's not bad. It's not a terrible thing. I like ETFs a lot better than mutual funds, but for different reasons than maybe other people do. Because I like to control what sectors I want to be in. I don't care about the individual stocks picked in a normal mutual fund. I care about, because I can pick individual stocks, I care about the sectors or the place in the marketplace out there in the world that I want to be. Maybe I want to be in a foreign country. You could do that easy with an ETF. Maybe I want to do something that's not related to the stock market. Maybe currencies. Well, I can easily do that with ETFs. I can't do that with individual currencies, and it's harder to do that with mutual funds. It's doable. This is InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
You're listening to an encore presentation of InvestTalk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next InvestTalk.
How about we go to Mike in Fremont? How you doing, Mike?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. How are you up there?
Down here, I'm doing great.
Good. I've been listening for about a year, and this is my first time calling in.
Well, thanks.
And if I could I just take the answer on the air on this? And it may be just common knowledge, but it seems to me on my mutual funds that they all seem to take a dive in December.
And there is a specific reason, Mike.
Okay.
It's not just yours. Yeah, you can take it off the air. That's okay.
Yeah, good. Thank you. Sure.
Mike, it's just not yours. It's many, many, many mutual funds do this, and this is why. It's very, very simple. In December, sometimes in November, many times in December, these mutual funds do what's called a capital gains distribution. Now, if you think about it, it'll make sense. Think about what a mutual fund does. It buys and sells stocks all year long, right, inside the mutual fund. When it does that, hopefully it's making money. And if it's making money, it's incurring capital gains tax. But it doesn't pay capital gains tax, just like you don't, until you do your taxes. Well, they have to distribute, mutual funds have to distribute those capital gains to you so that you can put them on your taxes. So what will happen at the end of the year, if a mutual fund has a high turnover rate, meaning they buy and sell, buy and sell, buy and sell a lot during the year, and they've made money on those buy and sells, they would distribute those capital gains to you in the end of the year. Let's say the mutual fund is selling for $10 a share, and one day in December, you see it go to $9.50. All of a sudden, one day, they never tell you what day it is, so you can't sell it the day before, you do not know. They actually give you that 50 cents, by the way. They give that 50 cents to you. You'll see it coming into your portfolio if you're looking carefully. And then you have to pay the taxes on capital gains on your return when you get your 1099. So what it is, it's that jump down in November, December in one day is a capital gains distribution. That's what that's called. Many, many mutual funds do it. The ones who don't do it are the ones that don't have capital gains distributions. They don't have the capital gains. Let's say your mutual fund buys a stocks in December of one year, and they never sell those stocks for a full year. You will not have any capital gains distribution, and the net asset value of the cost of the fund will not go down. So one thing we kind of look at is the capital gains liabilities, which you can find out, by the way, during the year. We actually cut back a couple of mutual funds because we expected large, we didn't sell them outright, but we expected large capital gains distributions, and we were trying to avoid it. Sometimes you're successful, sometimes you're not. So, Mike, that's what that is. It's very common, and it's in the end of the year, and it happens a lot. Don't think you're doing anything wrong or they're doing anything wrong. That's not the truth.
Another information source to help you improve your investing skills and gain you some stress-relieving perspective is our KPP Premium Newsletter. It comes out each Friday, and one of the most popular features is our Stock Watch. At least a couple of companies are introduced to you to watch in each edition. To sign up, just go to investtalk.com today.
ETFs. Let's talk about ETFs. And we'll compare, we compared ETFs and mutual funds, and I'm doing a bit more of that after the break. But how about just plain old ETFs? What are some of the things you should do about buying? What are some ideas? What are the rules? What should you do? Well, first of all, you can find ETFs almost anywhere. Fidelity, Charles Schwab, Vanguard, TD Ameritrade, they all have ETFs, produce them. So you can buy them through there. There's a huge number of them out there that could do almost anything. And so you have to look at them. And you really have to understand what you own in an ETF. Most of them track an index or a sector of the market. They also can track a foreign country's market. They can do different kinds of tracking. They can track precious metals or almost any commodity out there. So what they are, they're very specific, very transparent in what they do. That's better than most mutual funds. The transparency in ETF is better, in my personal opinion. Besides, also, you know, ETFs are a little cheaper. You still have to look at what they do and make sure they do what they say they're going to do. And don't expect, I'm worried that people treat ETFs like stocks. Well, they're not really stocks. They're groups of stocks, sectors of stocks, you know, or an index. So you got to treat them, they're not individual stocks. ETFs are a great way for a small investor to diversify. It really is a good way to do it. I like ETFs. I think it's a good option for a lot of reasons. Okay, but you still have to know what you're doing. Don't think you can just, well, I'll just buy an ETF. Unless you're going to buy an index fund, put it away for 10 years and not look at it, okay. Then I'll agree with it. You can do that. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Love to talk to you. We're going to, in the next half hour, we're going to talk about those toots, that sell signal that's very strong, but it's only happened twice in 20 years. And does the stock market guide the Federal Reserve policy? There's a study out that kind of hints that it might. And what are some of the other dividend, non-dividend income investments you could try? That's our talking points for the next half hour. We're glad you're with us today for Invest Talk. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley. You can see my portfolio check updates on investtalk.com. I'll be in San Ramon on the 11th. That's this week, this Wednesday exactly. And then San Jose, May 25th. So to reserve your spot for a one-hour informal meeting, just go to investtalk.com, and click on the Invest Talk tab. And we'll talk with Joe in Washington next.
We thank you for subscribing. If you'd like to take Steve up on his offer, it's really pretty easy. He meets with a limited number of our podcast subscribers on Skype or telephone. This is a way to benefit from his expertise, get his view of your retirement portfolio, and get some ideas if you'd like. It can be a very educational hour. To set up a time, just go to investtalk.com and click on the Invest Talk tab and then Portfolio Review.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
888-99-CHART, let's talk to Joe in Washington. How you doing, Joe?
Hey, Steve. Thanks for taking my call. I love
the
show.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
So I had a question regarding one of two options. I was considering allocating about $3,000 of my portfolio into gold, and I was thinking of either putting $1,000 each into Goldcorp, Barrick Gold, and Newmont Mining, which I just looked up are the top three gold companies in the world, or I was thinking of putting all $3,000 into Vanguard Precious Metals. There's a $75 fee for Vanguard Precious Metals, which works out to be about 2.5% of your investment. I know it's less risky, but wanted to see which option you would take with allocating $3,000 to gold, or if any of those options.
Okay, is the Vanguard Precious Metal, do they invest in just gold mining companies?
No, I think it's gold and other metals as well.
Okay. And are they all mining companies? Silver mining, gold mining, molybdenum mining, you know, copper mining?
I think, are you talking about just Vanguard Precious Metals?
Yes.
Yeah, it's my belief that they do more than just gold.
Okay. So then you probably won't have the pure play on gold as you might have on individual mining companies. We happen to own Barrick Gold in our managed portfolios, our stock managed portfolio. We have like five exposures in gold mining companies, and I'll say gold and silver, not all just gold, but because we do have a silver position.
Okay.
So I would say that you would probably do better if you bought the three mining companies, but you would also be more volatile, Joe. And if you're okay with more volatility, you would go, but the more volatility with a more possible upside, you go with the three mining companies. With less volatility and still upside potential, you go with the mutual because they'll have a lot more positions. And some will be good, some will be bad. But if gold goes up, they all will go up. Okay.
So do you think it's a decent time to invest in gold, or should I wait for a little pullback?
I'd probably wait for a little pullback. We bought gold last year. We got in too early, started buying it last year, and kept buying it up until January of this year. And then it started moving in January. Now it's had a pretty good move. I still think it has a pretty good ways to go, but I probably would wait for a little bit of pullback. I think I would. Joe, appreciate the call. Thank you very much. Good luck. I hope it works for you.
Thank you very much.
And thanks for listening. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Let's go to Chris in San Jose. How are you doing, Chris?
Just fine, Steve. I had a question for you regarding day trading. I did not want to get involved in day trading, but while trading and buying some stocks, I got some warning from my trading platform saying that potential day trade. And when I talked to my broker, they were saying something about if you have less than, I think it was $25,000, you couldn't trade more than five trades in 5 days or something. Does that sound right to you?
That's only because of your platform, your particular platform. Do you want to tell me who you're using?
I don't know if I would get in trouble for doing
that. Okay, don't tell me then. No, that's that particular platform. Let's say you're using Scottrade or you're using E-Trade. They have their own rules. You go to somebody else and there won't be any rules. You can go to somebody else, they'll have different rules. So, Chris, it's only that platform. They're trying to discourage you from day trading. That's why they're doing it.
Okay, yeah, because the way it was presented to me is if it was some sort of SEC rule, and I was wondering about that.
There isn't. That's wrong.
There isn't.
There is a three-day clearing that they could wait 3 days, but even that's old thinking. They don't have to wait 3 days, but a lot of companies still do. In other words, when you do a day trade, you're buy and sell, you know, for them to click before you can use that money again, they got to wait 3 days. That used to be the old rule. That's not necessarily so anymore. But a lot of platforms say you got to wait 3 days. They're discouraging day trading because they think people can't, you know, there are too many people losing money. Yeah, it's
difficult. Well, I'm not trying to day trade, but it just came out that way, you know. So at any rate, I just wanted to find out basically what the real deal was. I appreciate it.
It's just their particular rules. SEC has guidelines for everybody, okay? And you can interpret those guidelines differently. And one of those things is you're supposed to know your customer. That's one of the guidelines. You're supposed to make sure you reduce the amount of risk, give the client the best fill on their prices. There's all these guidelines. And so the companies are left with, well, I have to set up rules to fall within these guidelines. And the SEC doesn't tell you what rules, so you kind of have to make up your own rules, and then they come in and audit and say, I accept your rules. So they've just got, I think they just got strict, that's all. That particular
platform.
Okay, well,
thanks a lot, I appreciate it.
Thanks, Chris, appreciate the call. Let's go to Jessica in Mountain View. How are you doing, Jessica?
Doing great. Thank you for the show, Steve.
Thank you.
I have a quick question.
So
I have an IRA. I'm thinking of buying a rental property in that. Is this a good idea? What's your thoughts on that?
Well, there's nothing wrong with buying rental property, and you can use an IRA to do so. But yeah, there's some specific rules, Jessica. You just can't go out and buy real rental property with your IRA money. You can't do that. You have to set up a special IRA to do that. You know, so be very, very careful with the rules. You got to be very careful because if you violate the rules, the IRS is going to say you took out all the money and they're going on income tax on it. So there's nothing wrong with buying real estate. And where you are, which is in the Silicon Valley area, real estate is extremely expensive. But I think it's a good market to be in. And I do like real estate as something to help diversify a portfolio. In other words, if you want to buy real estate to have a different source of income rather than being in the stock market or bond market, I think it's good to have diversification. It's one of the reasons why, Justin became a broker because we felt, we had to help people with real estate questions and maybe help them find real estate if they want to buy real estate. So, no, nothing wrong with it, Jessica. Just be very careful in an IRA how you buy it, because you got to have a certain kind of IRA to do that. Okay? Thank you for the call.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Is it time to downsize, upgrade your property? I think about that. I'm thinking about that in my own house. Time to downsize? Am I ready to downsize? You know, or should I fix it up? And should I fix it up to downsize? Should I consider a reverse mortgage? It's not for me, I don't think, because I don't need it. Justin Klein, along with Chevy Atkinson, who heads an award-winning realtor team, will be offering real estate reviews by Skype or telephone May 12th. That's this Thursday. So, Jessica, if you want to call in and talk to them, you can do that. To reserve your time, just click on Contact Justin and write Real Estate Review. So that's at investtalk.com. So go to investtalk.com and click on Contact Justin and write Real Estate Review, and he'll be in touch with you.
You hear Steve talk about portfolio checkups. You can always see his schedule on investtalk.com. For podcast listeners and others out of reach of our California offices, you can meet with Steve via Skype and telephone to schedule your time. Just go to investtalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab.
Okay, well, why don't we go ahead and talk to James in New York. How are you doing, James?
Good evening. How are you today?
I'm good. Thanks for the call. Thanks for listening.
I'm trying to maybe attempt to better understand PE ratio, for example.
Okay.
Better evaluate PE ratios in relation to whether or not a stock is suitable or sensible to buy at a certain level. Like, for example, a stock that is worth, say, $14, how to determine if it's undervalued or overvalued by looking at the PE ratio.
Okay. That's a very good question. It's not nearly as simple as people think it is. Well, just buy something with a low PE ratio. Okay? That means the price compared to the earnings is low. Well, I wish it was that simple. If it was that simple, everybody in the world would do it and everybody would be rich, won't they, in the stock market. But it's not that simple. And that's a very good question, James, because PE ratios are commonly misunderstood in their application. For instance, you need to start with an understanding of the overall market PE ratio, which is around, historically, about 15. But when it's a low inflationary environment, the PE ratio for the overall market is higher, 16, 17. When it's a high inflationary environment, the PE ratio is lower. So there's different rules. And then you got to go by sectors. High growth companies generally have higher PE ratios. So the tech sector generally has a higher average PE ratio, more like 18 or 19. This is overall. I'm talking about in general, James. Now, when we start to, and of course, mining companies and old companies, their PE ratios are usually lower. Now, so you can't say, well, I'm going to compare Ford's PE ratio with the PE ratio of Netflix. It makes absolutely no sense. And you can't say, well, I'm going to compare it with the overall market to 15. That makes no sense either. You have to compare the PE ratio of the auto industry with an auto company. And you got to compare the EP. And that's why you hear me, James, say, what has been the 5-year average range of this company's PE ratio? Because you also got to compare it with the range that it has been in for years. Then add into that, James, always when you're looking at a PE ratio, look at forward estimated earnings, not backward, not current, not the most recent 12 months, forward estimated PE for next year. You want to look at earnings for next year and then apply the PE ratio.
And why is that?
Because that's what everybody does in the industry. And it's that simple, James. It's what I do as a professional. That's what every other professional does. He looks at forward-looking earnings, even though those earnings could be totally wrong, James. Could be totally wrong. But that's how we invest. Oh, look at that company. It's in a high growth industry. It's growing very nicely. And next year, it's going to make X. We don't talk about what it made last year. We don't care. We want to care what it's going to make next year. So if I care and all the professionals care, James, you have to care. Look forward, not backward. Okay?
Okay, thank you.
Appreciate the call. I wish it was easy. I wish it was easy for me. And again, PE is just one thing to look at. It's a good thing to look at, but it's just one. You also got to look on profit margins, return on equity, return on assets. You got to look at the competition, the environment, the economic cycle that you're in favors certain types of industries over other industries, depending where you are in the economic cycle. On and on and on. That, of course, what makes it fun, but also makes it hard. But that's our job, is it not? It's your job, too. Okay, this is a signal, a sell signal. I tried to bring in both sell and buy signals and try not to be too downer, even though I feel the market should correct sometime this summer. I don't want to be too much of a downer because you never know. I don't know. I don't have a crystal ball. But I do like to look at different technical aspects of the market and fundamental aspects and then go back in history and say, well, what happened the previous time? So in the last 20 years, this thing has happened twice. And what this thing is I'm looking at the 100-week moving average and the 50-week moving average. And it's only happened twice that the 50-week moving average went down through the 100-week moving average. And the two times that it happened was March of 2000, and June of 2008. Do you know what happened to the market after those two times? The market tanked both times. Now, this is the problem with looking at this statistic. This is not statistically valid. It's only two data sets. Two. That is nothing. If you talk to a mathematician and say, well, I got two data sets, and so let's extrapolate from there, he would laugh at you. So you can't just take this and say, oh, well, this is what's going to happen. No, no. All I'm doing is reporting the news here. It's happened twice in 20 years, and both times the market tanked afterwards. Now, what happened in 2000? Well, we had the dot-com bubble. What happened in 2008? Well, we had the housing bubble. What do we have today? Are we in a bubble? Are we in a bubble? You might say we're in a debt bubble. The government has way more than debt. But we can't say that. We can't really say that, can we? What kind of other devil? Can you say you're in a housing bubble? Well, maybe in San Jose you are, but not the rest of the country. Maybe you could. Okay, can we say that we're in a financial bubble of some kind? Well, I can tell you that I think the market's overvalued because the P.E. ratios over the overall market, which we just discussed, instead of being 15, which is a long-term average, it's closer to 18. With earnings going down. See, so you got to look at more than just one thing, two things. You got to look at a bunch of things. And even then, you don't know. I have no crystal ball, people. Nobody does. So don't believe what all these pundits, you read an article and this, oh my God, that's the one I'm going to read about this or that going up or down. They don't know either. No one knows. I wish we knew, but you don't. What can you do? You can compare previous times with this time and say, well, the probability is this. That's why I could easily say, I think the market's going to correct this summer. Why? Because the probability. It often corrects during the summer. Very often. And the middle two quarters of the year are usually the weakest two quarters of the year. So it's very easy for me to say, over historically, it looks like that's happened. And I think it'll probably happen again, it seems. But that's as close as I can get to saying what the market's going to do. That's it. I wish it was better. You're listening to Invest Talk. Our number is 888-99-CHART. Give me a call.
You're You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
888-99-CHART is our number, 888-992-4278. How are you doing, Manuel?
I love you guys' show. I've been listening for about 3 months, and I learned a lot of good stuff. My question for you today was, the company I work for matches us in our 401k with their own stock, and they're telling me that the stock's going to split. You know, I know then you end up with twice as many shares, but why does it split is my question.
Okay, good question, Manuel. I bet you there's a lot of people out there that want to know why it does that. Why does a company split? Do you know if it's going to split 2-for-1?
I'm not sure. Somebody, one of the other guys that's always paying attention to his 401k a lot more than I do will tell me that today.
Well, just to let you know that the most common split is 2 stocks for 1, but they don't do that all the time. Sometimes it's 3-for-2 or 5-for-3. You're going to do different ones. But most common is 2-for-1, so we'll try to stick with that. So what's happening is you had one share before at, let's say it was $50 a share. Then you're going to have two shares at $25 a share. So you didn't really increase the value of your holdings at all. Splits do not increase the value of anything. They just give you more shares. Now, why would they do that? One of the main reasons they do that, Manuel, is to lower the price of the stock to make it more attractive for more people to buy. Think about this. What if the stock price was $1,500 per share? How many people would be able to buy 100 shares or 50 shares?
Not too many.
That's right. So they keep splitting. Microsoft did this all throughout all its history when it first started. Split 2-for-1. So did Qualcomm. Qualcomm, which is a huge San Diego stock.
Actually, I owned Qualcomm before it split.
You can see if it never split, the price would be so high that not too many people would buy it. The most common reason, Manuel, is that they wanted to lower the price to be more attractive to more people. The second reason they do it is to get more liquidity. In other words, if they split it 2-for-1, they have twice as many shares out there to trade. More liquid, more people can buy and sell. Same, it's related to the first reason, but that's the only reason why they split the shares.
Okay.
Does that sound good?
Well, that answered my question. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening, Manuel. Appreciate the call.
Annuities, asset allocation, reading stock market trends, building a truly balanced portfolio. If it's important to you and you want to know more about it, we're here for you. 888-99-CHART.
Okay, we're going to go to Jim in Palo Alto. How are you doing, Jim?
Thanks for taking the call.
I appreciate you making it.
Hey, I have a quick question for you regarding Roth IRAs. When one invests in a Roth IRA and you make trades, you create capital gains and losses, what happens with the short-term versus long-term capital gains? Since they're not taxed, is that not a consideration at all?
Not a consideration at all.
Okay, so that is the advantage over just a regular brokerage account.
In a Roth and a regular IRA, you don't care about short-term, long-term capital gains. You don't care about any of that. You trade whatever you want to do because there's no tax on it.
Excellent.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Appreciate the call. Does the stock market guide the Federal Reserve policy? In other words, if the stock market goes up or down, are they moving their policy in reaction to the stock market? I'll give you an example. They moved up the interest rates in December, right? December. Ordinary core point. The market crashed in January. As soon as it crashed, or after it crashed, all of a sudden they talked about, well, maybe we're not going to be in a big hurry to move rates up. But before that, they were thinking about 4 times this year. So UBS did a study, and their conclusion was, it certainly looks like it. Remember, what is the Federal Reserve's mandate? Maximum employment and stable prices. They have a dual mandate, and sometimes those two things conflict. They can't do both at the same time. So they want employment and no inflation, or deflation for that matter. And you can't really blame them because remember the stock market itself is a leading economic indicator, and if it crashes, that may mean that the whole economy could follow it, and go into recession. Well, meaning the Federal Reserve, supposed to try to prevent them or have them not be so deep. So maybe they're justified in keeping an eye on the stock market. It's not so simple for them either. Everybody, if I can leave you with one message, it's not easy. Okay, our time is up. If you have a question you want to ask me directly, you're welcome to send me a note. And I will get back to you, I promise. Just go to investtalk.com and click on Contact Steve. I really make an effort to get back to you. I'm Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Justin Klein and everybody at KPP, thank you for listening today. And let's get together again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.